Try a subscription to Gardener's World magazine for just $14.99 and find inspiration for your garden. You and a loved one can enjoy two-for-one entry to hundreds of gardens nationwide. Visit buysubscriptions.com/May24 to subscribe.
Hello and welcome to the BBC Gardener's World magazine podcast, brought to you by the team here at the magazine. Join us as we chat all things gardening with the nation's favourite experts.
Has gardening helped you deal with difficulties or challenges in your life? Has it helped restore your positivity? Hello, I'm Miranda. Welcome to this episode. Today I'm chatting to JJ Chalmers, ex-Royal Marine Commando, who you may be familiar with from his guest appearances on BBC Gardener's World, as well as his time on Strictly Come Dancing. JJ gardened as a child and has recently got back into it, building his family a garden and growing veg. This he does with his physical disabilities resulting from an explosion in Afghanistan, June 2011. I started by asking him what happened on that life-changing day.
I was a Royal Marine Commando, and I served with the Royal Marines for 10 years. And in the sort of the peak of my career, I was deployed to Afghanistan in 2011. I was a boots on the ground soldier. I was on the front line. I was deep in the green zone of Afghanistan, the sort of fertile lands that most of the population lives in. And that's what we were there to do, to protect the local population so that they could go about their life. And as I say, most of them were just humble farmers who wanted the simple pleasures in life that we take for granted in many ways. And that's where we came in, primarily to provide them with security to do that. Now, our biggest threat were improvised explosive devices. These are sometimes called roadside bombs in the sort of media. They are kind of crudely made explosive devices that get buried in the ground predominantly. And if you step on one of them, it unleashes a huge explosion. And it typically takes someone's life or catastrophically injures them. And that's what happened to us on the 27th of May in 2011. We were searching a bomb-making factory, actually, you know, where we suspected these devices were being made. And unfortunately, one of my friends stepped on one of these devices. It went off underneath his feet, and the blast that came away from it, particularly all the debris, all the sort of the dirt, the mud, the bricks, the rocks, the sand, that came my way. And it really just, you know, for want of a better word, it bludgeoned me. And I obviously came away from it alive, barely in some regards, but I'd managed to more or less keep all of my body. I lost two fingers in the blast, but the rest of my body was there, but far from intact. And every part of my body, from pretty much my knees up, sustained some form of damage. But, you know, my life was saved by 18, 19-year-old guys who just did the most remarkable thing, which is, you know, you can't quite imagine what it's like to owe your life to somebody, particularly one of your friends that you care so much about. And the next thing I would know, I wake up back in Britain, back in Birmingham, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, 1 week later. The remarkable machine that is the sort of recovery of the armed forces, particularly in Afghanistan at that time, just swung into action. Helicopters picked me up. I was in a surgery, in a surgical unit within 1 hour of the blast going off. As I say, I was back in the UK within 48 hours. It was a remarkable, remarkable thing, which I suppose in many ways I just had no experience of. So it was quite a thing to wake up to.
Mentally and physically, that was a lot to rebuild from. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, and you're right about life-changing, because of course, there's the life-changing element, which is that, you know, I'm now disabled and my body doesn't work the way that it used to, but it's all the other stuff that comes with it is life-changing. It's the loss of a career. It's the loss of the social network that ultimately, you know, when you're in the military, you're constantly surrounded by your closest friends who you would do anything for, and you're ripped out of that environment. And ultimately, you know, it is taken away from you in some respects. So yeah, you have to start again. You know, I had to start again with a new body that I had to learn how to use. And that was daily tasks like putting my clothes on and, you know, feeding myself. But as I say, you have to start rebuilding a new career. You have to start rebuilding in some regards a new social network, because, you know, even geographically, I went from living in Plymouth with the Marines back to home just outside Edinburgh, literally living with my parents. So, you know, it was absolutely life changing.
Could a young Royal Marine, you, imagine yourself gardening?
Funnily enough, yes, because I had grown up in a very green-fingered house. So, you know, we were always getting our hands dirty pretty much every weekend and definitely throughout the summer. There was always a big project, either in the house, but mainly in the garden that needed done. So, you know, I remember really fondly one summer, you know, digging and putting in a pond in my parents' garden, which, you know, we still got to this day, 25 years later. You know, there was building of a terrace, or my parents have a small burn at the bottom of their garden, you know, putting in retaining walls for that. And then, yeah, as I say, just keeping the greenhouse going of a summer. So I was very green-fingered. But then, yes, I went off to the Marines. And actually, a big part of that was wanting to be outside. It was wanting to be in nature, but not necessarily tending to it. Having said that, in Afghanistan, you know, we got a few plants planted and whatnot, because you're living in these very sort of, you know, austere conditions in the heart of rural Afghanistan. And the level of comfort that you have is entirely down to yourself. Now, of course, security is your number one priority in terms of maintaining the checkpoint. But for example, we had a chicken coop and we kept a couple of chickens so that we could have eggs. As I say, we planted a few plants, but actually we didn't really need to plant plants because we were in rural Afghanistan. When we went out on patrol, you know, we were happy to barter with the locals and buy a few, you know, fruit and veg and whatnot, just to sort of make everything just seem a little bit more normal. And, you know, because otherwise you're eating out of packets, you're eating out of boil-in-the-bag food, and you just want to be able to sit down and eat something that looks a bit fresh and a bit more human, I suppose.
As a gardener, I remember we call it a mess room, which I believe is a military term, but I think that's probably as much as you and I have in common. Coming from
no, you'd be surprised.
And
you'd be surprised. I'm a pretty ordinary bloke, and yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like gardening, it surprises me that I have my own garden now. By which I mean, I'm surprised I'm a grown up more than anything. And it's just such a lovely thing to have, you know, responsibility for, you know, albeit small, but a little chunk of the world.
And a lot of us have turned to gardening, or turned more to gardening, to deal with difficulties. I mean, myself, I went into it in a huge way after I lost my father. And there's a lot of listeners out there through different things they've been through, find gardening really helpful. You, I'm imagining this, it's an ongoing thing. I've heard you say that it can be two steps forward, one step back, sort of dealing with things. You're still in pain, aren't you? It's not something you've managed to kind of put aside. Is that fair? And does gardening offer you anything?
Yeah, I mean, yes, my condition is ongoing. I naively thought when I sort of finished my surgery and my recovery back in 2016, when I left the Marines, I was medically discharged, I thought I was kind of fixed. And yes, there might be some maintenance 20 or 30 years down the line, but the reality is, you know, I've just most recently come from a surgery to dig a piece of shrapnel out of my leg, which has been infected and bothering me for the best part of 4 months. And I'm very aware of the fact that this will be an ongoing thing. That this body needs maintained, and not just by surgeons, but, you know, it needs to, I need to look after it myself. I need to maintain my fitness, and I need to be sensible about the things that I do. You know, you need to accept that this is something you will live with for the rest of your days. And it's also up to you to make sure that these things last the rest of your days, you know, And we are very much in uncharted territory as well. You know, as a collective, those of us that survived, you know, these catastrophic injuries in Afghanistan and Iraq in particular, you know, we shouldn't have survived, basically. It was medical advances. It was incredible, you know, skilled individuals who made us the unexpected survivors of that conflict. So, you know, we don't really know the long-term effects of this. But yes, you know, there comes a physical toll with that, but there comes a mental element to it as well. You know, accepting that you will have to, you know, find a balance in your life in terms of the pain that you have to endure, you know, in terms of having parts of your life where, you know, everything seems to be going fine, and then all of a sudden, bang, you're in hospital 2 weeks later. You know, the unexpected nature of that. And so, on the flip side, I'm very lucky. I'm extremely busy with my career. It takes me away from home a lot, you know, whether it was 3 months doing Strictly Come Dancing, or, as I say, you know, working on major sporting events all around the world. You know, it's quite common for me to be away from home for 2 or 3 months, sadly, particularly during the summer, which is the sort of main sporting calendar. Obviously, times are slightly different at the moment, but it's nice to be able to come home and do the normal everyday things, which are, remind me of my childhood, essentially, I suppose. And that's what I want to pass on to my kids as well. You know, that opportunity to spend time outside, get your hands dirty, and just kind of, you know, keep the place running, as it were.
How do you feel when you're outside gardening?
Oh, I feel everything. I mean, I feel just completely content in terms of what a lovely privilege it is to be able to go outside and do something, you know, in the fresh air. It's just a lovely thing to get to do. Having said that, I also feel the challenge of it. You know, I love learning new things. I love, looking at a pile of soil and turning it into something, you know, knowing that how I want to shape my garden, you know, how I want to nurture my plants, whatever it might be. Like I'm far more sort of a landscaper, I would say. You know, I like to get the pickaxe out and get the shovels out. Not so good at it anymore, but I find a way. I love building sandstone retaining walls, you know, raised beds with sleepers, whatever it might be. But once you've done that bit, it's really satisfying to then actually be able to plant it out and nurture and tend to something. That's the thing I'm learning a lot more about at the moment, actually. So yeah, it's a whole range of emotions because of, as I say, the challenge, the opportunity to learn, and the opportunity to just enjoy something that's simple, really.
Is it in any way a spiritual or religious place for you, the garden?
I suppose, yes, spiritual would probably be a quite good way of talking about it. Green spaces in general, not just my garden, but I'm very lucky to have parks that sit either side of my house, essentially, within a mile or so. One of them in particular, that what we call the Glen in the town that I'm from, Dunfermline, it is... It's been a really special place to me for 20 odd years, you know, and it's been somewhere that I grew up playing hide and seek as a kid in, you know, and running around with a football in. And it's somewhere that I've, you know, there was a big part of my rehabilitation that I could go somewhere and just be comfortable in my surroundings. And then also, you know, actually go for a walk that wasn't along a hospital corridor, essentially, you know, actually to go out in a 3D world and hear the birds chirp and all that kind of stuff, which I think most of us have really begun to really appreciate through lockdown. And now as a father, it's something which I just want to pass on to my kids. Like, and that, I suppose, from a sort of spiritual point of view, like, it's the most important thing in my life is my kids and what I can give to them. And I don't think I can give them anything. I just, for starters, I feel I'm incredibly proud to come from Scotland, for starters. I just think, you know, it's a beautiful country where people from around the world travel to come and see. And I just happen to be born here. You know, I feel that about, you know, the whole of the United Kingdom, but particularly about Scotland. And I just think I consider it, you know, a lovely place to sort of pass on to my kids.
It's interesting you talk about your kids, and obviously it's something you want to instill in them as much as you had it instilled in you. And I was listening to you talk about commando values, and it made me think, so, right, I'm going to test you on this. So excellence, integrity, self-discipline, and humility, right? So those are your commando values. What values do you think young people, your children, can gain from being in nature and gardening, if we were to turn it around?
I just think, I don't know if it's necessarily, I don't know what the, as I say, the value would be, but it's some sort of simplicity. I suppose it's the perspective of, and I think lots of people have learned it during lockdown, that actually we don't need as much stuff as we think we did. You know, I think when we really, I mean, put it this way, when we started lockdown and, you know, as a parent trying to raise two young children, you know, you use all the tools in your toolbox, from soft play areas to going to the cafe to whatever it might be. That was all gone. We didn't even have play parks. You couldn't even sit on a park bench during the first lockdown. So all of a sudden, you know, the big oak tree became something just wonderful. And actually, my kids loved it. They loved the simplicity of it. And I suppose in some ways I'd never offered them that, because I'd always gone, oh, let's go to the soft play instead. And you're like, well, no. That they see no difference, you know, they're loving this just as much as any other manufactured environment that I could put them in. So I don't know what that is, whether it's just, as I say, simplicity, or whether it's just general perspective that you can get from being part of nature. And I suppose another thing is the kind of, particularly when you own a garden and you look after it, you know, it's a responsibility, I suppose, to look after your little patch. And I always want my kids to have that value of you know, wanting to work hard and wanting to, you know, nurture something. And that really does come from something, true ownership. You know, you feel like this is your thing that you need to look after. And I have it on a very small scale, but, you know, I have a friend in particular who owns an estate in the north of Scotland, and it's a huge management responsibility to look after all the nature, to look after all the animals, even the people whose livelihood depends on it in some way. And I love, you know, taking my children to that environment and being able to give them an insight into, you know, just having ownership and responsibility of something. And then I suppose the biggest thing is just a hard day's work. There's nothing more satisfying than you know, standing up at the end of the day and your back's creaking and you go, oh, that was tough. But actually, your gin and tonic tastes all that sweeter. and, you know, obviously don't give that to the kids. But it's just that sense of, you know, how I often say that the best stories I have in my life, they never start with, oh, remember when the weather was perfect, or remember when everything went to plan. They have some form of hardship in them. You know, those are the best big mad adventures I've been on. But actually, you know, you can boil that down even to a day in the garden where you just go, you're halfway there and you're just going, oh, I really just want to take a break now. But I'm a big believer in just, you know, powering through and getting the job done. And yeah, that's hard work, that's graft. And as I say, that can start at home. And I don't think there's any better place to learn that than in the garden. And that's what I learned as a kid, in fairness. You know, we had hedges that needed trimmed, we had grass that needed cut, we had, you know, whatever it was. And they became my responsibilities as a teenager in particular. And, you know, I wasn't allowed to go out and, you know, play football or get on the computer or whatever it was until those things were done. And I will do the same for my kids.
As a young man, as a ex-Royal Marine who is gardening, from your point of view, do you think there are young men who think gardening isn't something for me? Do you think there's a stigma around gardening not being accessible for them?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think we're lucky that we live in a point in history where stigmas are being broken all over the place. I think there's also a generation of young men in particular who almost take pride in not being able to do practical skills. You know, sorry to say this, but he wouldn't argue. But my brother-in-law, for example, is pretty proud of the fact that he couldn't change a light bulb in some regards. And so it's, yeah, I think there's two things. I think there are genuinely people that almost rail against it. So that's sort of like, I'm not doing that because, as I say, I take pride in the fact that I know nothing about it. But then I think we see this in barriers and all sorts of things. And in fairness, I used to be a teacher as well once upon a time. And of all the things I ever tried to instill and teach kids about, one of the most challenging, but I think if you could really, you know, if you could break this barrier, this taboo, you know, the skies were the limits for kids. And it was that sense of find the thing that you love and do it. And don't care about what others think about it. You know, when I look back at my life and I talk about any regrets that I might have, I don't have any regrets of the things that I have done, but I certainly would have regrets of the things which I chose not to do, particularly when I was worried about what somebody else thought about it. And as I say, you know, if you're a teenager and you've got an interest in horticulture or gardening, whatever it might be, and you're worried about what the cool kid in school might think, what a wasted opportunity. Just go out there and do the thing that makes you happy. And that could be anything. You know, for example, if put it in sort of in the most recent terms, doing Strictly Come Dancing, Royal Marine Commando, putting on sequence and sparkle. Now, I could have been very self-conscious about that, but in reality, at no point did I feel any level of embarrassment doing what I was doing. In fact, from the armed forces community, I had nothing but respect because of the enormity of the challenge of what I was facing. And as I say, that just boils into that, you know, imagine if I'd said no to it because I'd worried about what somebody else would have thought. And yes, I would hate for a young person to lose out on the opportunity to discover a passion which they could have for the rest of their life because they worried about what somebody else thought about it.
You, for me, and for a lot of people that know your story, represent a lot of resilience. I'd say sort of a willpower of steel, you know, to come away from having been, you know, blown up. I mean, you lost a couple of friends in that incident. So, I mean, it was a very dark thing. And so I want to ask you, young men and mental health, it's an increasing issue, especially talking about problems, I think. And then we see horticulture and you sound very much aware of the benefits of it. How do we get those two things together? Is there a way?
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, as you say, you know, mental health is taking great steps forward. I mean, even in my time from joining the military 15 years ago, you know, attitudes to mental health are in a very, you know, very alpha male environment has changed so significantly, almost to the point where actually, you know, we're really starting to get to the root cause of, instead of dealing with mental health at its last point, when it's a catastrophic, you know, the catastrophic element, trying to deal with it in a positive sense and actually create good behaviors, which allows you to unlock that extra part of your potential. Training your mind in the same way that we train our bodies. You know, it's that resilience you talk about. The Royal Marines taught me resilience. Now, don't get me wrong, it continued the work that my granny that I told you about that used to have the garden over in Ayrshire, you know, she was a proper, you just get on with it. But, you know, not in a, because it was her, not in a very toxic way. It wasn't a sort of, you know, suck it up and get on with it. It was sort of, okay, these are the situations in front of you. You need to accept them. You need to deal with them. But sometimes you do need to just buckle up and you know, put your best foot forward and keep going. But be honest about the fact that you're struggling. That's absolutely fine. So yes, I think there's an enormous amount of things that we're seeing in improvements within mental health. But yeah, it goes back to that, what I was talking about finding your passion in life. Now, you know, you look at something like the Invictus Games and the way that it changed my life. Now, that's what sport did for me at that point in my life. But sport isn't for everybody. You know, it might be theatre, it might be baking, and it might be gardening. And so, you know, it's about creating those opportunities for people. You know, we know that for young men in particular, you know, for people under the age of, young men or men under the age of 50, suicide is the biggest killer. I mean, that is a horrific statistic. You know, I think, you know, when we look at the Second World War generation, for example, you know, these were guys that came home and one of the first things they did was get an allotment. You know, and tend to their allotment. And that gives you a place to clear out your head, have time to yourself, you know, deal with something. I have a friend who's done it most recently with a bushcraft school that he set up in the Southwest. And that is massively about an area that he took himself to be kind of off grid, but it was less about the physical nature of being off-grid and far more the fact that he could disconnect from it. And I think gardens and green spaces are perfect for that, giving us time to be able to, you know, deal with, you know, things that are happening within our own headspace, but also do something physical. You know, do something, as I say, that you can walk away at the end of the day and feel like you've achieved something. And I think a big part of, you know, our mental health struggles is not being able to see the victories that we have on a daily basis. You know, people talk about, you know, what I've lived through and the resilience I've developed. It's happened because I faced something so enormous that it was impossible not to see the resilience developing in me. But actually, for a lot of people, the challenges they face on a daily basis are so minor, but they build up in such a way that it becomes catastrophic, but they're not seeing the victories when they win over them. And you can see victories in your garden when you see it, you know, flourishing.
Absolutely. So how do we get you and the Duke of Sussex to make gardening as cool as the Invictus Games?
Well, that's it. It's a good point. The thing about the Invictus Games in many ways was taking something which, you know, recovery sport, disability sport was becoming cool, partly because of London 2012. And you're right, what he did was package it in a way that made it cool, that made it accessible, that made people buy into it. Now, a big part of that was telling stories, if I'm being completely honest. It was brutal honesty from the individuals that were part of it. And it was seeing, yes, a great success at the end of it. You know, for me, it was winning a medal, but for other people, it was just making it across the finish line. And you're right, you know, how I would love to come up with that concept, because I would love to take young people into green environments where they've never seen. You know, I remember working in a primary school in a pretty deprived area, and we were like, the piece of homework was, you know, note down which flowers and animals you see on your way to school, without realizing that they probably wouldn't even see a flower or an animal on the way to school. It was, you know, what a terrible oversight on my part. But yes, you know, how do we create something competitive, probably? How do we create something accessible? And as you say, how do you then package that up so that the stories are told, but there's also something brilliant at the end of it? And it's probably something as simple, and I was thinking about this the other day, The problem we sometimes have is that when we try to fix a problem, we try to parachute into a situation, we fix it, and then we pull away from it. And sometimes we did that in Afghanistan, and it just didn't work. The way that you fix a problem is by empowering the individual to do it. And that's what Invictus was about, is empowering the individual to fix their own problems, etc. And that would be it. You know, if you look at the green spaces that get abused by young people, for example, you know, public areas that are, you know, vandalized or broken or something like that, if they had genuine ownership over these things, they wouldn't do those things to them.
I think we need to get you and Harry doing an allotment challenge. I think that might be the answer.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I don't know, what's the horticulture in California like? I'm not sure.
He can probably grow better tomatoes than you in Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if he's in wine country. Get himself to the Napa Valley.
You'll have to ask him and find out for us how much gardening.
Yeah, I will do. I don't know. I mean, to be fair, he was constantly growing up surrounded by very nice gardens, if you look at Kensington and whatnot. And you're right, California is a beautiful, you know, it's actually, you know, having spent time over there with the US Marines in particular, it's got some stunning scenery and some beautiful, beautiful green spaces.
So no excuses, Harry.
Yeah, no excuses.
I just want to ask you about how you overcome difficulties in the garden. Because you do have issues with dexterity, is that fair to say? How do you get around problems, sort of fiddly things in the garden?
Yeah, there's two things. There are fiddly things from what comes from my hands being, you know, missing a couple of fingers, having significant nerve damage in my other hand, you know, what fingers I do have, none of them work. None of them work as they're meant to. On a cold day, that's pretty much a write-off, unfortunately. It's a good excuse not to go out and do the garden on a cold day. But yeah, when the weather drops, my hands really seize up and I can't use them. So there is the dexterous element of, as I say, dropping seeds into what it might be. That's where my daughter comes in, actually. It's quite lovely. You know, that's where I'll get her involved. But the other thing is, because of the instability and the pain that I experience, particularly in my right elbow, it's the heavy stuff. It's the lifting and shifting. It's the, you know, swinging a pickaxe and digging a hole. That's about finding a balance, really, because I can do it. It's just that I'm going to pay for it at the end of the day in terms of the pain that I will be feeling. And I will pay for it in the long term in terms of how long the joint in my elbow or the, you know, knuckles in my hand will last for. And I'm getting arthritis essentially setting in early. But it's about not being paralyzed by that, because I want to do these things. I'm not going to allow it to stop me from doing it entirely. So yes, there's a level of taking pain medication, for example, but again, it's about finding a balance and splitting the jobs up. And that's what, as I was saying earlier, it's kind of useful to have five or six jobs going at one time, so I can take a break and move over to something a little bit softer, as it were. You know, I put it this way, by the time I finish cutting my grass and I don't have a lot of it, I'll feel it in my arms, you know, so I'll know going into that job just how bad I'm going to feel at the end of it. But the grass needs cut and I enjoy doing it. So, you know, it's finding that balance. And then, yes, in terms of some of the tools and methods I use, that's actually one of the most exciting parts of it. It's constantly finding a way, you know, constantly finding a way around something. You know, for example, you know, one of the problems I have is I can't really wear gloves. You know, when I put a pair of gloves on, my hands already feel like they're wearing gloves in terms of the nerves that I have. So as soon as I put a pair of gloves on, I lose pretty much all sense of touch and feel. So a lot of the time, you know, I'm working, getting my hands very dirty down in the dirt, but actually I don't mind that. But you just have to be very mindful when you're sticking your hands into a thorny bush, basically.
So on the darkest days when things are really difficult and you go out into the garden with your kids and you're going to start a project, what is that feeling? What is that kind of hope that you get from being in the garden that helps?
Yeah, I mean, I get an excitement straight away. I mean, don't get me wrong, we all know there's tasks in the garden that can be a bit more monotonous than others, and you're kind of like, this just feels like a task. But as I say, a project, a proper project, it's nothing but excitement once you've got the tools out and you're getting a good run at it. So, you know, it's the excitement of problem solving, it's the excitement of doing the task. And as I say, it's also that excitement of, you know, when you stand up and you feel that crick in your back, how good that feels when you know that you've earned that, you know, they've earned that bit of pain and suffering, which sounds a bit strange, but it's that, It's just knowing that you're doing something which is yours. And I don't think there's anything more fulfilling in life, except for, in fairness, doing it with your kids and passing it on to them. Because it's just, you know, I try not to force them out into the garden, but as parents, we need to sort of sometimes be like, get your jacket on, let's get outside. I remember wonderfully, my daughter, she's wonderfully stubborn. And I was telling her that she needed to take her tutu off and put her rough clothes on so we could go outside. And we found a compromise, and that was that she wore her overalls, but she had the tutu over them. But yeah, you know, it's getting out in the garden, passing that stuff on to them. I just, as I say, it's so hard to pinpoint the single thing that I get from a garden. It's everything, you know, it is everything. And it's the simple things of hearing the birds, hearing the rustling. That stuff is just so lovely. And as I say, owning something which is yours and looking after it.
Thanks for listening to the BBC Gardeners World Magazine podcast. So if you've enjoyed this episode, please tell others about it and rate us in your podcast provider app. And we'll see you next time.